Minister Muhammad Ali al-Hakim trying to urge demonstrators to pull back from the vicinity of the U.S. embassy compound.
The most secure embassy in the world now under siege. Today is Wednesday, January 1st, the first day of 2020. And this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also ahead this half hour, Australians shelter on beaches as brush fires consume their towns. And New Year celebrations have begun around the world. That and more, all ahead on VOA Asia. ...2020 not getting off to a good start in the Middle East, Iraq specifically. Now, as we go to air, hundreds of Shiite protesters are besieging the compound of the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad's fortified Green Zone, setting fire to one of its gates and with some reportedly entering the building. Most of those involved in the attack appear to belong to pro-Iranian Shiite parties. They are upset about U.S. strikes on a pro-Iranian Kateb Hezbollah militia base in the Iraqi border town of Al-Qaim, which killed at least 25 people. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
The mob of angry attackers Tuesday used crowbars and street signs to smash the steel doors of the U.S. Embassy after breaching the perimeter of the compound and setting fire to at least one of the security posts. Several thousand pro-Iranian Shiite demonstrators chanted Allahu Akbar and the U.S. is the great Satan as they planted yellow Hezbollah militia flags and threw stones and other debris at the U.S. Embassy compound. One leader of the pro-Iranian Shiite militia group spearheading the demonstration, Qais al-Khuzali of the Asahab Ahl al-Haq militia, claimed that the United States is responsible for most of Iraq's woes. He says that this is the embassy of plotting, spying, and all projects aimed at destroying Iraq. It is the nerve center of such activities. Iraqi media reported that government security forces did not intervene to stop protesters from breaching either the heavily fortified Green Zone, where the U.S. Embassy is located, or the embassy compound itself. Iraqi Interior Minister Yassin al-Yassiri, who was present outside the embassy, told journalists that caretaker Prime Minister Adel Abdel Mahdi has warned that U.S. airstrikes against Shiite militiamen would have serious consequences. Amateur video showed Iraqi Foreign Minister Muhammad Ali al-Hakim trying to urge demonstrators to pull back from the vicinity of the U.S. Embassy compound as he was surrounded by Shiite militiamen. U.S. President Donald Trump blames Iran for the breach of the U.S. Embassy compound and demanded in a tweet Tuesday that Iraq protect the embassy. Arab media reported that Iraqi security forces were present in central parts of Baghdad, but there was no indication that any forces were being deployed to protect the embassy. A number of U.S. security personnel were reported on the roof of the embassy building. Earlier reports indicated that U.S. diplomatic staff had been evacuated from the building and that the U.S. ambassador was on leave for the holidays. Saudi-owned Al Arabiya TV, which opposes Iran and pro-Iranian Shiite militias in Iraq, reported that a crowd of protesters in Baghdad's nearby Tahrir Square told journalists that they have nothing to do with the Shiite militia protesters who attacked the U.S. embassy. Anti-government protests, which forced the government to resign, began on October 1st. Ma'an Jabouri, a former Iraqi Defense Ministry official, told reporters that you can't compare between the millions of protesters who have turned out in all of Iraq's major cities to protest government corruption and the militiamen with ties to those in power that are attacking the U.S. Embassy. If the Iraqi government had full sovereignty over the country, he insisted, this attack would not be happening. U.S. warplanes attacked the Shiite Kitab Hezbollah base near the Iraqi-Syrian border several days ago after a U.S. contractor was killed and several others wounded last week when fighters, reportedly from the same militia, fired rockets on the K2 military base in Kirkuk. Pro-Iranian Shiite militia forces have also fired rockets or attacked U.S. forces at other Iraqi bases in recent months, including Balad, Taji, Ain al-Assad, and Baghdad Airport, as well as the U.S. Embassy. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. Chinese experts are investigating an outbreak of respiratory illness in the central city of Wuhan that some have likened to SARS. Authorities in Indian-controlled Kashmir will restore text messaging services in the disputed region on Wednesday. China's foreign minister has decried international bullying practices while meeting with his Iranian counterpart. And the wife of an abducted Sri Lankan journalist is accusing the military of trying to derail a court case in which 9 soldiers have been charged with her husband's abduction. Visit our website, excuse me, so sorry, for more, voanews.com. The new year starts with a cold. VOA Asia continues. Thousands of people took shelter on a beach to escape bushfires in the Australian state of Victoria. The seaside town of Mallacoota was surrounded by flames. There have been multiple emergency warnings in Victoria and New South Wales. At least 2 people have died and dozens of homes are feared lost. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The sky in Mallacoota was turned a grotesque red as strong winds pushed out of control bushfires towards the popular seaside town about 500 kilometres east of Melbourne. Thousands of people were trapped and sought shelter on the beach. Some waded into the water to escape red-hot embers that rained down. Others fled by boat and watched as the flames approached.
That behind me is Mallacoota. Now the fire front's come through. Everyone's safe and sound. Got the girls and the dogs up the front. Got supplies, but I hope everyone's just get into the water. It's chaos. I've never seen anything like it.
There was relief in Mallacoota later Monday when a change in wind direction diverted the fires away from the town. But once again, very hot temperatures and gusty winds have conspired to make this another dangerous and destructive day. At least 2 people have died and several others are unaccounted for as dozens of blazes burn in southeastern Australia. The authorities fear many houses have been lost. The New South Wales Rural Fire Service Commissioner Shane Fitzsimmons said this was the state's worst bushfire season on record. As the fires rage, so has the debate over Sydney's lavish New Year's Eve fireworks display. Thousands of people signed a petition calling the event an insult to bushfire-hit regions, but organisers said it was too late to cancel the festivities. 12 people have died since the crisis began in September. What Australia needs is fire-drenching rain, but no significant falls are expected for at least another month. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Now this, like our top story, is swiftly changing. You can keep up with it all at Facebook VOA Asia or at our website, voanews.com. Happening now in Asia, a partial new U.S. trade agreement with China will be signed in the middle of next month. U.S. President Donald Trump said on Tuesday, announcing that he will also then travel to China for continued talks. The so-called Phase 1 ceremony will take place at the White House. High-level representatives of China will be there. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. China's direct investment in the U.S. has slowed to a trickle, dropping from 80% in 2016 to 2018, according to New York-based research provider Rhodium Group. Among the hardest hit sectors are real estate and hospitality, with Chinese investors no longer scrambling to buy prime properties in cities like New York, Chicago, San Francisco, and Los Angeles. VOA's Elizabeth Lee reports on what's behind this downward trend and how it's impacting one American city in particular.
The Los Angeles skyline can be seen from Stephen Chung's office, but something is missing. And what he is not seeing worries him.
The skylines are no longer filled with cranes that are supplied by Chinese investments coming over here. What we're worried about are the construction that's already here that cannot be finished because of the financing situation.
Chung says one example of this is the billion-dollar Oceanwide Plaza, located in a prized location near the Los Angeles Convention Center and the complex where the Lakers and Clippers play basketball. Work stalled in January for this condo, hotel, and retail space, and Chung has seen very little activity since then.
In terms of people moving to that location and actually the retail activity that's going to be there, that's revenue that we will not be getting as soon as we hope.
The standstill at Oceanwide Plaza is but one sign of a sharp drop in capital flowing from China at a time of heightened tensions between the two superpowers. Overall direct foreign investment between China and the U.S. peaked in 2016 to a record $60 billion, then dropped drastically, according to the Rhodium Group. One reason is a change in China's monetary policy, says Los Angeles-based land use lawyer Dale Goldsmith.
There were the currency controls out of China, where a lot of companies were parking money, I think it was probably to get money out of China and into a safe investment. And at the end of the day, the Chinese cracked down on that.
Another reason is increased vigilance by a federal watchdog organization, the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States. The Rhodium Group estimates the committee's scrutiny has led Chinese investors to abandon more than $2.5 billion in U.S. deals. A relatively strong U.S. economy is another factor.
The dollar has been very strong, making investment a lot less attractive for the Chinese in the States. On top of it, you'd have skyrocketing construction costs.
To top it all off, a trade war persists between the U.S. and China, sowing uncertainty in an already challenging investment climate.
Part of the reason why we're seeing really not any new projects coming from China is because of the China trade war, not knowing the future. And as the tensions escalating, I think a lot of the Chinese companies are wary in terms of whether they should enter the U.S. market.
The trade war is creating another trend. To avoid high tariffs, international companies are moving manufacturing out of China and into Southeast Asian countries. In some countries, it's creating new wealth. Others are trying to increase their direct foreign investment to offset the trade war's negative effects in their own countries.
Specifically Vietnam and Indonesia. Over the past few years, they've been a lot more active seeking for business opportunities.
So long as economic tensions remain high between Washington and Beijing, Los Angeles and other U.S. cities will have to look elsewhere for investment capital. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. Authorities in Vietnam's business hub of Ho Chi Minh City said recently they will not be investing in the economy directly anymore, signaling the latest move in the communist nation's ongoing transition away from a centrally planned economy. Next year, state investment will account for only about 16% of the city's economy. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories. VOA Asia continues. While onions can't fly, their prices can soar, and tourism goes underground in the Philippines. These are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Ira Melman.
Bangladesh is urgently importing onions by air as the price of the essential ingredient in local dishes soars to record highs, with even the prime minister chopping the bulb from her menu. The price of onion is a sensitive subject in South Asia, where shortages can trigger widespread discontent with political ramifications. Its price has climbed to eye-watering levels in Bangladesh since neighboring India banned exports in late September after heavy monsoon rains reduced the crop there. 1 kilogram of the staple vegetable usually costs 36 U.S. cents, but has now soared almost 10 times after the ban was imposed. Local media reported several onion consignments recently arrived at a major port in Chittagong City, imported from Myanmar, Turkey, China, and Egypt. The state-run trading corporation of Bangladesh, TCB, is also selling onions at a discount of 50 cents per kilogram in the capital of Dhaka. At the city's busy Farmgate neighborhood, hundreds of people lined up for hours, some getting into scuffles to buy the subsidized vegetable. Restaurants have cut onions from their menus, and there's been a fall in the sale of deep-fried snacks normally cooked with onions. Bangladesh's largest opposition party has called for nationwide protest over the record prices, which they blame on the government. Vaulted ceilings and rows of stone columns stretch into the human darkness deep below the Philippine capital, where workers are transforming a more than century-old underground reservoir into a tourist attraction. The sparks of welding guns illuminate the damp contours of El Deposito, an abandoned Spanish colonial-era relic with a rich history that has been hidden from view for decades.
We Filipinos must appreciate the significance and the importance of water reserve in the Philippines.
Crafted from volcanic rock and completed 137 years ago, the underground cavern was made to hold 53 million liters of water, which was pumped through iron pipes into thousands of homes until the early 20th century. The reservoir fell into neglect after World War II, turning into a dump site, even being invaded by squatters over the next half century.
We always think that the Spaniards treated us so badly that time, but somehow, on the other side, they have given us the way to provide us clean water for the Filipinos.
For VOA Business Scene, I'm Ira Melman.
And keeping with business news for a moment, former Nissan chairman Carlos Ghosn emerged in Lebanon this week after slipping out of Japan while on $14 million bail for financial misconduct allegations. The 65-year-old industry leader said he, quote, escaped injustice and will no longer be held hostage by a rigged Japanese justice system where guilt is presumed, discrimination is rampant, and basic human rights are denied, unquote. It was not clear how Ghosn fled Japan, where his home was under video surveillance. He has passports from France, his native Brazil, and Lebanon, where he grew up. This news break from VOA Asia. Chinese President Xi Jinping has called for Hong Kong to return to stability following months of pro-democracy protest. In a New Year's address Tuesday evening, she said a peaceful, harmonious environment was key to the Asian financial hub's prosperity. Visit VOA Asia on YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. This is VOA Asia. Scientists are scrambling to understand why thousands of dead mussels are turning up in several rivers across the United States and Europe, including one of the world's biodiversity hotspots. Experts worry that the rapid decline of mussels in Appalachia's Clinch River may be a sign of worldwide die-off of the important water cleaners. VOA's Steve Barragona has more.
At the bottom of Tennessee's Clinch River, these mussels are struggling.
This is a pheasant shell, Actinonias pectorosa. This is the species that we've been the most concerned about with the die-off in the Clinch River.
Biologist Jordan Richard with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service says the Clinch River is home to a remarkable 46 species of mussels and 133 species of fish. It's one of the most biodiverse regions in the world. Just 3 years ago, Richard says there were nearly 100,000 pheasant shell mussels living in this stretch of river alone.
Now, as of 2019, we have less than 14,000 pheasant shell that live in that same stretch.
Mussels filter everything from silt to bacteria to heavy metals out of the water. Each one can clean up around 40 liters each day, so losing them is bad news.
First and foremost, you'd lose that water filtering effect, and so you'd have cloudier, more turbid water. You'd be more prone to algae blooms.
That's a problem for everything downstream, including plants and fish, as well as city water supplies. No one knows what's killing the mussels. Disease is a leading suspect. But Richard says mussels are also coping with several environmental problems.
One of the first questions that comes up when we tell people we have dying mussels is, could this be caused by climate change? Is this due to pollution? And the answer is probably always somewhere in the middle. Even if we pinpoint a single specific pathogen or disease that is the reason that the pheasant shells are dying in the Clinch River right now, there's probably more to it than that.
Researchers in North Carolina, Ohio, Oregon, and parts of Europe are reporting mass mussel die-offs too. They worry that this could be the beginning of a worldwide collapse with consequences for entire ecosystems. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres presents a gloomy assessment of the past year as he's welcoming in the new year 2020. He rests his hope for a better future upon the world's young people. Lisa Schlein has more from the UN European headquarters in Geneva.
UN Chief Antonio Guterres looks forward to 2020 and the decade to come with a mix of dread and hope. While welcoming in the new year, he suggests the uncertainty and insecurity of what lies ahead is cause for reflection and concern. He considers persistent inequality and rising hatred, a warring world and a warming planet as ever-present threats to stability and peace. He says climate change is not only a long-term problem, but a clear and present danger. He says the world cannot afford to see the present generation fiddling around while the planet burns.
But there is also hope. This year, my New Year's message is to the greatest source of that hope, the world's young people. From climate action to gender equality to social justice and human rights, your generation is on the front lines and in the headlines. I'm inspired by your passion and determination. You are rightly demanding a role in shaping the future, and I am with you. The United Nations stands with you and belongs to you.
In September, the United Nations presented its top environmental award to a global student movement known as Fridays for Future. The movement, inspired by Swedish teenage climate activist Greta Thunberg, is demanding action to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions that are leading to climate change. Guterres, who views global warming as a grave threat to life on Earth, champions the young activists who are agitating to forestall such a catastrophic outcome. He says the world needs young people to keep speaking out and to keep thinking big. He urges young people to keep pushing boundaries, to keep up the pressure.
I wish you peace and happiness in 2020. Thank you.
Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And while not so here in Washington, the new year already has begun in many parts of the world. If you couldn't tell by the accent, more than a million people surrounded hazy Sydney Harbour in Australia to ring in the new year, despite the wildfire crisis ravaging much of that country. But some communities canceled fireworks displays for safety reasons, while others protested against spending money on fireworks instead of helping fire victims. In Auckland, New Zealand, half a ton of fireworks burst from the sky tower above the city center. And in Japan, people flocked to temples and shrines, offering incense with their prayers to celebrate the passing of a year and the first New Year's under Emperor Naruhito. Well, thank you so much for being with us for VOA Asia on this first day of 2020. We hope you'll join us many times throughout the new year. Until then, I hope you have a peaceful, prosperous, and healthy new year, and we'll see you again soon.